And welcome to iDeveloper Live, episode number 32. We just break into the chat room just in time to rescue people from the iDeveloper TV tune. Other people in the chat room were just beginning to say, give us another song, please. But no, you can't. That is it. That is the tune you get for many copyright reasons, and we just love to drive your brain wild with that funky electro 70s porn sound that we've become so famous for.
Velveeta in your ear.
That's the one, Velveeta in your ear. Yeah, someone made me a Velveeta dip last year, John. It was like my arteries were just screaming at me. It was horrible stuff. That comment of yours makes far more sense now I've actually eaten the stuff. and lived to tell the tale. Just. Okay, well, as you probably guess, on the line with me today, we have Mr. John Fox.
Hello, world. Hello, Scotty. Hello. Rawr.
Hello, everybody.
Probably guess that Simon Wolf is with us, so all together then, chat room.
Hello, hello.
Rawr. Rawr. I have no idea why we roar like a lion when it's a wolf, which is sort of one of those just things that happened, and we don't really care that it's inaccurate and doesn't really work, because that just sort of reflects with most of the rest of our lives, really. Okay, so quite a lot to talk about this week going on, but let's start, where should we start? Steve Jobs biography. Who's bought it?
Yep. No, I got a copy last night.
Did you buy a hard copy, or did you get a electronic, like a Kindle?
No, I went for electronic. I actually didn't do what lots of people didn't and stayed true to the platform, and I bought the Kindle version of it, mainly because I am deeply and utterly in love with my Kindle anyway, and I hate reading on the iPad. Just because I could make sure I got it last night, and it came in at about 1 o'clock in the morning, and I could start reading it, which does have a downside in that I didn't get huge amounts of sleep last night, but never mind. All for good cause.
Is your wife aware that you love the Kindle more than her?
She is. Well, we're actually divorced, which happened before I got the Kindle. The Kindle wasn't the cause for it.
Okay.
So it's only the cat who gets put out by these things, and my daughter when she's with me.
Okay, well, you know, I always ask these questions and say stupid things, and every now and then I get caught.
John, it's been quite a while. This isn't something that's happened in the last few weeks, so don't worry.
Okay,
John, we will just give you a few moments to take your foot out your mouth. So how far through? I mean, don't tell us any of the details, because some people were tweeting some of the details, and I think that's unfair because lots of us can't get it as fast. I mean, it downloaded on my iPad last night as well in the Kindle app, because I use the Kindle app on the iPad because I haven't got a Kindle at the moment, but I do like the Kindle app. So how far through are you, and is it good?
I'm enjoying it so far. I'm up to him going and working for Atari. Which is obviously fairly early on in his career. But it's good. Not too many sort of surprises or revelations so far, but it's been very interesting getting the background to his childhood and how he grew up and his education, and just seeing really how he's been a sort of a free spirit, certainly in his formative years, and the influence in an odd way that he had on his parents as well. That almost he could almost sort of extend this reality distortion feel to them and sort of bend them to his will almost. But yeah, really interesting stuff. Good book. Certainly showing lots of promise so far.
Did you have a chance to look at the memorial video that Apple posted? You know, the event they held on campus.
Yeah. No, I watched that this morning. I sort of woke up to all the tweets about that, and I thought that was really good. I thought it was really nice tributes. If we're scoring anyone, I think Johnny Ive did the best little talk about him. I loved that story about the hotels. I thought that was just sort of typical Steve. I thought it was a really nice tribute. It was great to see them out celebrating his life. It wasn't sort of a sad event. So I think it was sort of what it needed to be. And, you know, hopefully it gave the employees some solace as well.
I would like to think so. I mean, gosh, you know, a memorial for me, I think, you know, half a person might care. It's like,
John the Scotty, he loves you.
Yeah, I know.
No, John, but... I would be there. I would tell a story about that time we were in a hotel, and no, I wouldn't actually.
you would be there because you're going to be the death of me to begin with.
That's probably very true. That's good.
So what did you guys think of the video?
I haven't seen it, to be honest.
I thought the interesting thing about it was, you know, his concern that the future Apple doesn't become paralyzed in the same way that Disney had. You know, what would Walt do? But I thought it was kind of interesting, though, that there was a lot of, like, do what's in your heart, do what's right, don't think what Steve would do. But then a lot of Steve would love this, Steve would love that, which doubtless I think he would. So, I don't know, I just thought the whole thing was just extremely well done.
Yeah, no, it was good. And I think Tim did a good job of effectively sort of hosting it all. And you know, he really has been thrown at the deep end, obviously, with him taking over the leadership, and then a few weeks later, Steve dying. And I think the guy's been absolutely brilliant. I think he's done a tremendous job in the face of it all.
Indeed, indeed. So we're being told that we're providing far too much information. That's what the feedback from the chat room is. So no more talks about.
I think you, I mean, it sounds like you read several, you know, quite a few pages there, and Simon only gave a sort of 10-second overview. I don't think it was too much detail there, but we will shut up about that now. We will shut up about that before.
Okay, we'll move on from that.
Before Simon, I guess. If you're wondering why Simon sounds a little bit strange, that's because he is. But other than that, he is also on the telephone because the internet isn't working in Somerset properly at the moment, so... there we are. Right, okay. SEO tutor. What's that about, Simon?
Okay, SEO tutor is a new application from Don McAllister of Screencasts Online, who you had on the show a couple of weeks ago. It's an application that I wrote for him, and a great artist, a guy called Jamie Peake, did the artwork and graphics for it. Basically, the backstory behind it is that Don decided that he needed to have a presence in the Mac App Store. Several of his competitors have videos out there, and he thought, I think quite rightly, that he should have something there as well. So a couple of months ago, we had a chat, and he asked me to write him a video player, which had a couple of extra twists in it, things like supporting subtitles, being multilingual, so things like the chapter list would be translated into localized formats. And we beavered away at the application, went through sort of several revisions and changes as we progressed with it. And it went live on Friday, and Don then sent out all the press releases and sort of did the official launch of it today. And it's been well received, which is great. Although I have to say that I think all the reviews relate to the content rather than the application itself. But it's really good. It's had good reviews. It's, I think when I checked earlier this afternoon, it was about number 16 or so in the top paid applications in the UK store. So it's been received really well. And we've written it in such a way that Don can create other video content for it. And he just creates a new target, does a little bit of configuring, and he can then build and distribute a new application. So all that's gone really well. The next step is going to be doing an equivalent version for iOS, which is pretty straightforward because most of the code except for the UI bits and pieces will port straight over. All written in the sort of the new to Lion AV Foundation. And it's been good. It's been a good, fun project to work on. One of those nice projects that's not huge, but it looks good. And I think and I hope it does everything that Don wants it to.
So that's a very interesting thing. You know, I saw some tweets from, you know, about the Cappuccino course from one of the Cappuccino guys, and they're like saying, you know, can I download the video directly to my iPod, and you know, without having to sync it first? And I think so far, Scotty, correct me if I'm wrong, that's the case. It's not the case. You have to kind of download it. You have to then sync it. There's no way of having an application or downloading it directly. And this seems like a pretty interesting model to be able to for courseware. to be able to have an application. And then I assume that when you download the course, it's stored either in the app's documents folder or cache or something like that. Is that how it works?
Yeah, on the Mac application, it's all actually in the applications bundle at this point, because of Lodsys, we've avoided doing any sort of in-app purchase. So each course that Don releases will be a separate application. And on iOS, it will be the same principle. But I think we have talked about doing something with in-app purchases, and at that point, then it will be that you would buy a video within the application, and it will just download it straight to the device. So I think it is a good way of doing it. Obviously, you know, file sizes are big. You can't, well, you could zip them up and then unzip it on the device, but it's a sort of an extra step to go through, and zip doesn't save it a huge amount of space. But, you know, the video is, I think, something like 2 hours and 20 minutes, and it comes in at about 350 or 400 meg. So it's not huge considering the duration.
But then does it, it may not solve the problem, but what's the upper limit for apps that you can download over 3G? It's something more like, or, you know, whatever, you know, cell network. It's 10 megabytes.
Yeah,
isn't it?
I don't know off the top of my head. I think we'll look into that obviously when we get to the iOS side. But I'm going to guess that most people, if they've got an application that runs into hundreds of megabytes, and there are plenty of games that do that, then they probably download it onto their Mac first, or their Windows PC, or over Wi-Fi straight onto the device rather than using their 3G.
Hmm. And had you thought about doing things like a streaming model, so that what you're getting with the app is the right to stream a certain number of times? And if you were to do that, if you were to have an app that kind of, I don't know, would it be considered in-app purchase if the app, by having it, gives you the right to X number of views or something like that? Or is that considered in-app purchase?
I don't know, actually. I mean, obviously, you can do sort of the broadcasting from an iOS device. You can do sort of effectively the broadcasting via AirPlay to an Apple TV, things like that. If you were looking at it from a point of view of being able to effectively distribute a subscription to your video content, and you limit the number of ways that or number of times people can watch it, sort of like Apple do with their TV and film rentals. I don't know. I don't know how Apple would take that, to be honest, because I get the impression, I haven't looked into it really, but I get the impression that they would have the attitude that you do an in-app purchase and you buy the video or the content, the extra content, and you download it, and you've then got that forever, effectively.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's also, I guess, the bandwidth issue, right? I mean, so if, you know, accepting the fact that you have a big download, still, it's Apple that's paying that bandwidth when they're hosting your app. If you did some mechanism that's streaming, then that's on you, right? Apple doesn't give you any type of – Apple doesn't even give you some mechanism to say, hey, you can take advantage of our CDN, but we're going to charge you X for it, which probably would be cheaper than what you could do.
But I guess because with an in-app purchase, all you're effectively doing is you are setting you're querying Apple servers and saying, does this person have the rights to this bit of content? And you can then either unlock something in the application, or you can download something extra to the device. I'm guessing that you could stream from your own servers into the application. I don't know if that breaks any of their guidelines or not. I know that they're a bit funny about adding content to applications, but I don't know if that would cover video and audio.
I think you do have to be careful, though, with streaming, because, you know, streaming is actually incredibly expensive. You know, bandwidth isn't, you know, it's a lot cheaper than it was a couple of years ago, but you can still run up a fairly hefty bandwidth bill pretty quickly if you're not careful. I mean, the reason we don't stream content is A, bandwidth, but B, you know, we're working on the basis that this is developer videos. If you're developing, you have a Mac, therefore downloading it to your Mac and syncing it with your iPad or your iPod is not such a problem. Although I guess with the with iOS 5 now, and people not necessarily going to be linking their iPads with their Macs, we may have to look at a way of delivering content straight down to that, maybe through an iPad app or something. But, you know, I understand what people are saying, but at the end of the day, downloading a file and just sticking it on your iPad, it's not a huge deal, is it? I don't think it is, or am I being just a lazy John?
Well, I don't know that you are, but I think the two comments I think were useful for it. One is that zipping it, and I think that the if I understand correctly, maybe one reason why you zipped it is just so that it doesn't get the wrong MIME type, right? So that when it's vented out by your server, the QuickTime player doesn't try to take hold of it, that it actually will just be saved, you know, to your downloads folder, then you deal with it. And I also understand the bandwidth issues, but right now you're hosting, so I'm wondering, can't you do something where you use like an NS Earl connection or NS Earl download, where you're going to download the file and then you can start playing it while it's downloading it, and so that basically they only have to download it once, but once the download is complete, they then have it on their machine, and subsequent, you know, views of it are from the device.
Yes, so you could do that. I think. And that's really going to be no different to you just, you know, making a download file available for them. But I think, yes, technically you could do that. There's nothing stopping you doing that.
Okay. I mean, you've said you're using this, that you've been doing AV Foundation as part of this, which is obviously new in Lion. Am I right in saying a replacement for Qt Kit, really, or alternative or alongside?
Yeah,
how do you see it?
I think it
probably is a replacement. At WWDC this year, Apple said that really you should be using AV Foundation from here on in, which kind of says that QuickTime Kit is now legacy. Obviously, QuickTime Kit is still available. There'll be plenty of people who still need it and still use it if you're supporting Snow Leopard or earlier. But I think the overall message is that AV Foundation is the way forward. I think for a couple of reasons. I think because they've been able to go back to the beginning, effectively start with a clean slate and create the framework, and also because it is now cross-platform. AV Foundation first came out in iOS 2.2, I think it was, and it was really basic back then. It was basically just for audio playback, and there was one class in the framework. In iOS 3, they beefed it up very slightly. They allowed you to do some audio recording. And then in iOS 4 is really when it took off, and you got things. It expanded from just audio into video as well. And you could do things like audio and video capture. You could start doing editing, obviously the playback, and you could do exports. And it went from iOS 3 had three classes in it. iOS 4, they jumped up to 57. It was a huge, huge step forward. And really when it became a usable system. And then obviously in iOS 5, they've done some refinements. But the big change was that AV Foundation came across to Lion. And it's all pretty much, compatible across the two platforms. There are a couple of little bits that are on one and not the other. But they're really minor things. It's things like AirPlay. But yeah, I think this is, if you're doing something new in audio or video, depending obviously exactly what you're doing, but I think AV Foundation is probably the way forward.
So let me get some understanding here. You know, AV Foundation, is this a from the ground up rewrite of the media stuff within OS X and iOS, or is this a new wrapper around sort of the traditional QuickTime Core Audio stuff?
This is completely new. It sits in sort of the hierarchy of the operating systems for both OS X and iOS. It sits on top of Core Audio, Core Media, and Core Animation, and it's tied in with all three of those. It completely replaces the old Qt Kit and the QuickTime frameworks. There's nothing to do with those anymore. And the big advantage, and the reason I guess it took so long comparatively to bring it to the Mac, is that it's 64-bit native. And because Snow Leopard was still 32-bit, they had to wait before they could actually bundle it in on the Mac side.
So, I'm sorry, what was 32-bit? QT Kit or some of the lower level?
Well, QT Kit was 32-bit. They sort of fudged 64-bit into it. But because they've gone 64-bit only in AV Foundation, they really had to wait until they brought out Lion, which is 64-bit only, before they could put it in there and say, this is what you're now meant to be using.
Go ahead, Scotty.
No, go on, John. I was just about to say, so really, if you're looking to develop anything that is pre-Lion, you still need to be using QT Kit. And is the philosophy of QT Kit versus AV Foundation very different?
To answer the first part, yes, you do. If you're doing anything before Lion, you're stuck, I'm afraid, with QT Kit. In terms of the philosophy, bits of it are very different. Bits of it are almost exactly the same. For example, on the capture side, there's a massive comparison. They only introduced the capture stuff in QT Kit fairly late on. I think it came in Leopard. So you had classes such as QT Kit Capture Connection, and you've now got a direct AV Foundation equivalent to that, and there are loads of stuff in the capture side that's almost like a one-to-one mapping. For most of the rest of it, though, it's different. The way that it does things like playback and loading the videos is all different. Exporting has been hugely simplified, so that you can now very easily, in just sort of a couple of lines of code, say that you want to export your video in, let's say, an iPad format or an iPhone format or for Apple TV. And they've sort of built in all their standard devices as very quick and easy ways that you can do these exports. But what they seem to have done, which is I think a good thing, although it does add some complexity, is that they've sort of realized that in this day and age, there's an awful lot of video content that's stored remotely and is, say, streamed down to computers off the internet. So they've modified the way it all works so that if you want to, you could say, okay, I want to get the duration of a video file. And you basically set up your request for that, and you send it off, and it's all done asynchronously. And it will go in, it will just get the little bit of information it needs for the duration. So you're not waiting for it to download the entire video before it can really start querying it. Now, sometimes it does have to. It depends what format the video is in and sort of things like that. But it will try and do the minimum it needs to do for what you want. So if you don't want to get a whole video for playback, you just want to query its properties, you can do that and it'll generally be faster. So they've built in all these ways that... it's sort of optimized. It's optimized for the fact that videos are big, and this stuff takes time, and you've got to do everything asynchronously because you don't want to block up your application, but you also want to be able to get the information and the data that you need as quickly as possible.
So what you're saying is that it's just lazy as all get out.
Yeah. Basically, I mean, it's quite interesting. It's very flexible in the way it works, and you have as well this it's slightly odd. It's slightly difficult at times to get your head around the way it works. But you've almost got sort of two modes it works in. In the properties of videos, things like duration of a video is a static property. So once you've got that for a particular video, it's not going to change. And then other aspects of it, they've said, okay, this is much more dynamic. So if you're playing a video, for example, the current playhead position in that video is constantly changing. And so there's a sort of a whole range of properties that you get back through key value observing. So it's sort of leveraging an awful lot of the technologies and the dynamic technologies, and it uses blocks, and it's making sure that it's almost impossible if you're using this stuff now to block the main thread and have an unresponsive user interface. But it's good. I mean, it's more complex because of it, but you're going to get better applications, I think, as an end result. And once you've got your head around the way it all hangs together and the way it works, it does make sense. It's just a little bit more complicated than the old style. Here's a movie file. Load that in. The whole thing sort of loaded into memory, and you can then do what you want with it.
So I have two questions. You know, I've done some work with QT Kit where... there are certain things that you can do with video in a desktop application where you just get much better performance. So, for instance, if you've got a video and you want to seek ahead to a specific time, you can just set the current time in QT Kit, and it goes there, and it, it's it's instant, you know. But then, of course, you're loading the movie from disc. If you're trying to do it and you're trying to stream the video, it was always kind of a little bit, I guess, unpredictable is the word I'm looking for, because it would set the time, but it has to get to that point, and then you get the audio first, and then you get the video afterwards. And I found it a little bit tricky to deal with, and I've played around with the different things. I forgot the name of this command line tool, but the thing that would basically allow for HTTP streaming, where it kind of divides the entire video into small pieces, and then basically it just figures out which files to vend over. Have you played at all with that, and know whether it's gotten any better or different with when you're using AV Foundation and a HTTP streaming video?
I haven't done anything on the streaming side yet, although my gut feeling is that it will be better, basically because they've got a couple of things. Firstly, it's much better at the whole sort of asynchronous side of it and going and seeking points in videos. You can now specify if you want to jump to a point in a video. There's a seek to time method, but you can also put into that some parameters that basically say how accurate it's got to be. So if you want the exact time down to sort of a frame, it will go and do that. But if you're happy to have it, say, within a second of your time that you've specified, it will be able to go and do that, and it will retrieve that much quicker because it doesn't have to analyze so much of the video. So on the basis that it's doing things like that, I would guess that if you're doing the streaming side, it will be much more robust than Qt Kit was, which sort of had effectively, I suppose, all the streaming stuff tacked on to it after the basics had been written. So I think it would be better. I haven't tried it, but my gut feeling is, based on the way it works and the way the frameworks work, that it would actually work this time, and it would be much better and more accurate for you.
So my second question. One of the things it seems that you're able to do is, if you have a core animation, that you can render it to video really quite easily, so that if you wanted to export your core animation to a QuickTime movie, it seems like it should almost be trivial. Have you played around with that much?
I haven't played around with it very much at all. What I do know is it isn't totally trivial, because it depends on what you're doing. AV Foundation, it uses core animation to display the video. You have to display it effectively in a player layer, AV player layer, which is a subclass of CA layer. And I think probably if you're exporting that in terms of, you're talking about if you're doing it, say, as a screen recording, yeah?
Well, I mean, I'm doing something, you know, for Memory Miner, for example. You know, I do use core animation to do all the slideshow stuff and the text overlays, right? So,
okay.
And I'd like to be able to export it, and it doesn't have to be real time. So I tried, you know, in the labs at WWC, just seeing what would the technique be using the old style. And what you'd end up doing is basically asking to render the layer into a context, and you could basically render the top level tree, but you could never get it fast enough, because you had to basically render it. You would do a timer, and while it's playing back, you would capture, layer it into the screen, then append those and make a video. And the problem is it could never keep up with it. And from what I understood with the new AV Foundation stuff, you can basically say, hey, here's the animation that I want to play, and go render it. And it doesn't matter if it takes two times as long to render in perfect quality than it would to play it back. I'm looking for the quality, even if it takes the extra time.
Yes, you can do all that sort of stuff now. And the added bonus you've got is there's a I'm trying to remember what it's called. It's AV synchronized layer, I think it is, which is basically a core animation layer that you can attach to your AV player layer. And the timing of that layer is tied to the video. So let's say you have, I did it with Don's application. When you've got subtitles, for example, obviously you're displaying the right subtitles at the right time. So if you're displaying subtitles through this synchronized layer, as you scrub backwards and forwards through the video, the layers themselves and the timing of the layers will handle which subtitles are to be displayed at which time. So things like that have suddenly become much easier. And things like you could do, I think Memory Miner does this, because I think you were talking a while ago about the old way to do it, but you can do things like a Ken Burns effect, so that as you're playing a video, you can then time and synchronize sort of zooming in and out or moving it. So some really nice things like that. You can now start to just tie it all together in with the core animation, and it's much simpler to do, and gives you some really, really beautiful effects.
And when I only recently started playing with CA text layers, and sometimes the rendering would not be so great. Is it better now, or?
Yes. In what respect do you mean they weren't so great?
Well, I mean, for instance, and maybe I'm just not understanding it correctly, but sometimes when you put a text layer somewhere, it can look pretty lousy. And what I found is that, if you do the integral rect, that makes a big difference.
Yes. But that's still a problem to a degree, because obviously it was all to do with the effectively the pixel alignment of the layers. And if you didn't have your layers on effectively exact pixels, then you'd get this sort of weird blurring effect. You still do have those sorts of problems, unfortunately. But it doesn't seem to manifest itself in quite the same way with things like the subtitles. We certainly haven't had any issues with sort of blurring or anything to do with that.
Wow. And do you do anything? Because I've seen with some movies, and I remember, I think it was like... I forgot the name of the something. It was a famous Indian movie that won an Oscar, and it was the first time Slum. What was it called? Something Slum.
Slumdog Millionaire.
Slumdog Millionaire. There we go. That was the first movie I'd seen where they placed the subtitles, in arbitrary locations on the video, because they were looking for places where they could get better contrast. Because I've seen different techniques people use. Is there anything that makes that easier? Is there any way that if you wanted to do something super clever, like analyze the color area of the video where it is, and then kind of say this is a good place to put the subtitles in general, or to be able to change the background of certain characters within a subtitle to be able to add whatever, a shadow or some type of offset.
You could, I guess. I mean, the thing is, you're never going to be rendering the subtitles over the video in real time, so you're always going to have the subtitles sort of prepared in advance. So I think what's more likely is that you would go through, you'd analyze it, and you would set effectively yourself the positions of where the subtitles are going to go, rather than trying to analyze frame by frame a good place to position them. Having said that, though, there is all sorts of extra processing you can do of sort of the raw video to analyze things like color distributions and things like that that you could do to it. Particularly with things like the capture, it's very easy now that when you're doing a capture, you can get effectively the raw frames and the raw data in those frames, and you can do processing to it as it's coming in live and as it's being captured, so you can start to apply effects to it. Effectively, you could rewrite photo booth pretty easily. So you can sort of do all that sort of stuff. So yes, you probably could analyze the frames and work out a good place for the video. But I think if you were doing subtitles, it's not something you would do sort of on the fly as you're actually playing the video. I think you'd have it all prepared in advance. Having said that, because of the way you've got the synchronized layer, there's nothing stopping you moving the subtitles around the screen. So you would just put that in, you could encode that in with the subtitles.
Yeah. Well, I always wondered how they did that. And subtitles is something I've always been interested in, but I get the impression that there's just a tremendous amount of manual labor that's into it. That's just no way of getting around it.
Yeah, I would guess. I don't know for sure, but I would guess that they sort of create the video, obviously, and then they write up the subtitles, and then somebody will go through it and actually look at the video themselves, because obviously subtitles are done over a number of frames or a number of seconds. And so if you've got things dramatically changing on screen and you're auto-analyzing it, the video potentially, or the subtitles potentially, could jump to a completely new position almost arbitrarily.
So Simon, Scotty. Tell me. Okay, so this is AV Foundation's going in the right direction. Lots of what's it missing at the moment that you wish it had?
The only big thing that actually I came across is when I was doing the subtitle stuff with Don. Is you can identify the fact there are subtitle tracks, but actually getting the subtitle data out is far from easy. And similarly, actually displaying the subtitles isn't particularly intuitive. Now, an awful lot of this is down to the fact that there are huge areas of AV Foundation that don't yet have any decent sort of examples from Apple, and there's not a huge, huge amount of information out on the web about it yet. It's getting there, but it's not. It hasn't sort of got the history behind it that something like Qt Kit's got. So it's not sort of standard playback stuff that I'd be after, because all that's great, all the exporting side's great, the capture side's great. It's now sort of the nice advanced features that I would like to see Apple tidy up a bit more. I was slightly discouraged a little while ago, not with the application I was doing for Dom, but something else on iOS 5, that they've broken. You can set sort of the aspect that, for a video. So, you know, when you're watching a video on your iPad, you can either zoom in so it fills the entire screen, or you can have it so you've got it sort of letterboxed. And they've broken that so that even if you change the way it's displayed, it won't automatically update. And that was sort of discovered in one of the early betas, and they went to Goldmaster, and they went to iOS 5.0, and they still haven't fixed it. And that sort of thing is really frustrating, because you think they've got this new technology, they're obviously spending quite a lot of time and effort on it, and yet these silly bugs, which actually have a big impact on a lot of applications, are being left in there and haven't been fixed.
So, Simon, how are you following with the chat room? There, you have fans, and they're asking you questions. They want your love and help.
I haven't really been following with them, because I've been looking at notes and gesticulating a lot.
That's right. Okay, well, you can pick those questions. I mean, John, is there a question you want to pick out from there, or otherwise we can maybe get Simon to answer them online in the chat room once we finish, because we're getting close on time. But, John, your choice.
Well, no, I was going to read the question that comes from KB Dal. Yes.
KB Dallas.
Yeah, so he says, dear Simon, you know, I love Scotty and John much more than you, but since you're here, I thought I would pose this question. What are you doing in your life to become almost as awesome as them? That's the question. No, it's not about that. It's about playing sequences of videos in succession. When you switch from one video to another, you get a black flicker. And he said he hasn't found a way to stop this, and he's also posted on Stack Overflow. Is that anything that you've seen?
I haven't. I'm just going to have a quick look at his Stack Overflow question, because I haven't done this yet. I'm just seeing. Let me just have a quick skim of this. I haven't sort of tried moving between different videos. You can. In the AV player, you can effectively replace the video. This is quite a long thread, so I'm not going to read through it all now. I will have a look at it. There are some methods to effectively swap out the video from the AV player and replace it with a different asset. I don't know. I presume that's actually what he's doing and might be causing the flicker. But I will have a look at it after we've finished and see if I've got any suggestions.
It sounds, I mean, just totally off the cuff and may not at all be helpful, but I just notice in general when you add items to, when you add content to a layer, sometimes you'll see flicker as it adds in. So, I mean, you can always set the layer's opacity to zero, for example. And then when the content is loaded, then kind of bring it back in or fade it back in. It may not at all be helpful, but.
It's worth trying, though.
Right.
Definitely worth trying.
Well, that's been interesting. I'm sure there's loads of stuff that we can take on. If you've got any more questions for Simon, he's available for free technical support 24 hours a day. We will post his telephone number to the chat room in just a moment. There we are. Right. Something just got very loud in my ear. But there we are.
Yelling at you.
Yeah, I'm now deaf. Okay. So it seems that this afternoon, or within the last hours or whatever, that there's been a MacBook Pro refresh from Apple with some new processors and updated graphics cards. So, John, is it time to trade in the old one now, do you think?
It is. Mine is really showing its age. You know, I already replaced the hard drive, and I'm constantly swapping like crazy because I only have 2 gigs of RAM. And I think at some point it's just going to be cheaper and easier for me to get a new machine. I'm pretty tempted.
The good news is Apple have left the prices exactly as they were. So yeah. That's it. Now, yeah, we can tell about your machine because on the cappuccino videos, we hear the fans quite a lot.
I know. Yes, when I talk about having fans, it's not people who like me.
Now, talking of the cappuccino videos, we released cappuccino videos a week ago on the Monday. And of course, you know, what happens? Various changes occur in the cappuccino install process. So yeah. We've released a README. To go with the installation part of the video, which is up there now, and we will there are plans afoot, which John doesn't know about, but I'm going to talk to him about in a minute, to bring some corrections just to the change stuff or some updates to the change stuff soon. But the cappuccino videos are going out really well, and we're getting some good feedback, John.
Yeah, that's good. I saw that too. I was incredibly happy. So if anybody's listening to this and needs help, you know, I'm very happy. As I've said to a bunch of people, you know, in my career, I've gotten so much help from people in mailing list or on chat or IRC, whatever. And to the extent that I can help pay it forward, I am genuinely happy to do it. You know, I've done things like, you know, done screen sharing to help people. That's an incredibly easy way to do tech support. If you haven't tried it, try it. You know, iChat screen sharing, it works really well. I think that the other thing too is we inadvertently, and I will take the blame for this, left out the source to one of the projects, and so that's up there. And I think that should be put in the main download. And I guess maybe you can email to the users or anybody who's listening that wants it. Just get in touch with one of us.
Yeah, we've refreshed the files for download, but there's a couple more things we just want to put in there as some additionals and changes. And then anyone who's bought it will get an email with loads of instructions on how to get all the latest and greatest stuff. We're going to keep this stuff up to date to the best we can. Right, okay, running out of time here. Last week I said a book draw. If you send me an email with the subject book draw in, I will draw a name out of the hat to get a copy of Mastering Xcode 4 by Joshua Nozzi. And so the draw has been completed. And John, do you want to know the name of the person who won the book?
I would love to know the name of the person who won the book.
The name of the person is Ron Green.
Ron Green.
Ron Green. And you know, Ron stood a pretty good chance of winning it in the draw.
Because?
He was the only one who sent an email.
Oh, no.
So well done.
So for all those people who have never in their lives won a single thing, here's your chance.
So we're going to do it again this week. If you want to win a copy of Joshua Nozzi's Xcode, Mastering Xcode 4 book, an ebook version, then if you send me an email, scotty@ideveloper.tv, that's Scotty, S-C-O-T-T-Y, with the subject book draw, we will put you in the a virtual hat, and you too may win a book, especially if you're only one who sends an email.
Really, you just changed the subject matter to I won.
Yeah. Yes. Can I win,
please? Claiming my prize.
However, we do like to reward our online listeners, who are our online listeners. I guess everyone's online, it's the internet. Our live listeners. So, John, give me a number. I don't know. But pick a random number between 1 and 18.
Okay. Should I keep it in my head?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now tell me what it is.
11.
Mac Lemon. Mac Lemon, you have just won a book as well. So
that took him a long time to count to 11, didn't it?
Did. I was going through. I had.
Did you have to take your shoes off for that one, Scotty?
I did, yes.
Oh, no.
I took my shoes off. Get back to your 70s porn, Wolf.
Porn Wolf is actually a good name.
Porn. He has to watch the 70s porn because he has got no internet. That's why he's on the phone. There he is. Right. So, Matt Lemon, if you want to send me an email as well, I will send you a coupon code to get a copy of Mastering Xcode 4 by Joshua Nozzi. So, thank you very much to Joshua for giving us these coupon codes for it. And well done to Ron for emailing in and being successful. Right, okay, Simon, thank you very much for sharing with us on AV Foundation and SCO Tutor. Tell people where they can find out about you and follow you on Twitter and read a blog and any of that stuff that you want them to know.
Okay, I am Simon Wolf. On Twitter, you can find me as SGAW. My business website is ottersoftware.com, and I have a blog at ottersoftwareblog.com.
Excellent. And John, remind me that you should need no introduction by now.
No, but I just wanted to say that it will not be me, but just in case a Twitter handle called Simon Wolf Loves 70s Porn appears, it's not me.
Oh, dear.
Yes. His entire collection is on Betamax as well.
Beat off, Max.
Superior quality.
There we are. Good, and I'm Scotty from iDeveloper TV. I have no idea where this podcast has gone. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at MacDevNet. Obviously, go check out iDeveloper.tv. Go take a look at our new shiny website. Well, it's a week old now, but it's still got a little bit of shine left on it. Check out the cappuccino course from Mr. John Fox, cappuccino for cocoa developers, still on special offer at $29.99. I mean, come on, how much better can you get than that? Right, that's the sales pitch. Dave, thank you very, very much for doing the engineering for us tonight and making sure that we stay on air. And thank you everyone in the chat room for listening. Thank you for everyone downloading it. Thank you everyone else for existing. Until next time, you take care. Thank you.